Can we have a roll call, please?
Dan Moore?
Here.
Debbie Berry?
Here.
Bruce Rinker is absent. Two members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Pledge allegiance, please. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have an approval of minutes?
Awesome.
Second. All in favor? Aye. Financial report, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, everyone. Our financials through May 31st are on page one. Highlighting a couple items, our property taxes are about $1.8 million ahead of where we had anticipated through this point. Last month, we were about $800,000 ahead, and an additional $1 million came in this year, this month, due to our tax advance number one coming in about $1 million more than what it was last year at the same time. So to date, simply a timing difference, about $1.8 million ahead of our estimates. Grants and donations also are a little bit ahead of schedule. It's a great thing. We're getting projects done and we're collecting on our outside tax dollars in a very timely manner. Golf is right at our estimates through May, and the zoo is about $200,000 ahead of our estimates through May. So we're looking very good at two of our largest revenue locations. Expenditures across the board are favorable. We do have 32 projects that are currently underway that are greater than $50,000. So there's a lot of projects going on at Cleveland Metro Parks that total about $8.5 million as of the end of May. So there's a lot of stuff going on. As I always do every quarter, at the end of June, I will be doing a more exhaustive look at our financials and an actual presentation. But through May, we look great.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have public comments. Do we have any public comments? Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We eat in the water or swim in the sewage. If you can be handcuffed for allowing your daughter to wade in water, where debris has existed for decades.
Excuse me, are you guys going to use a microphone?
Yeah, I can hear. We do not typically use microphones for meetings.
Are they usually this big, though?
Yeah, we often have size.
Can you talk a little louder then?
Is there a problem?
I will try. You're free to use your own microphones, but again, we do not typically use a microphone. We don't have one.
You typically have the media.
Paul, we do not typically have the media here. Right. However, the media are invited to be here at any point in time. Our meetings are open.
Will that,
by the way, guys,
will that one mic work for everyone?
No.
It will not.
This will not.
Well, I mean,
you have a microphone.
No, our board meetings are all recorded. They're all recorded, they'll be made online. Please move forward.
That's okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Wade in the water or swim in the sewage. If you could beach, you could be handcuffed for allowing your daughter to wade in water where debris has existed for decades. Across town, in Edgewater, your family can swim, if they choose to, in water with high E. coli levels, even after warnings are posted. How is the Euclid Beach debris overlooked for so long? The concrete and rebar from the old pier were discussed here in board meetings. After repeated sonar tests, it's not a surprise. That in itself is surprising. Will boaters be charged if they, quote, contact the water, as now forbidden? Or will that be excused as unavoidable and an acceptable risk at a marina? Incidentally, how can these regulations be approved on a second reading when the wording has been changed? Clean and safe is a mantra. Sometimes Metro Parks claims to be looking out for you. Sometimes it's all on your shoulders. While Metro Parks' agreement regarding McFarland House shows good effort working with the community, their actions taken at Euclid Beach do not. Metro Parks seems to alter their stance depending on which projects they favor. Often those are the ones in flashes. You preach trail priority and talk safety until trails require maintenance. Rocky River Nature Center, with 170,000 visits a year, still has not been funded to rebuild the loop trail, underwater even before the last rain. $11,000 was just spent for renovations at the brand new Merlin's Wharf, but nothing for trail repairs for those thousands of loyal visitors of Twin Joy Nation. As with Yuba Beach, it seems mundane maintenance takes a backseat to photo ops. That kind of choice, like discretionary law enforcement, is a true picture of official priorities. Why are capital project updates, formerly a routine agenda item, no longer available, even by request? Tracking such projects would provide an overview of money spent or allocated versus future needs. Monitoring expenditures is the most basic of commitments owed to the community. A final thought. Based on what was supplied to me, it seems credit card holders are alphabetized by first name. Perhaps that explains the lengthy delays in filling public records requests. Thank you.
Any other public comment?
It's off the sheet.
You want to ask my question? Why don't you go first?
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Ferry, Director Brian Zimmerman, Executive Director. First of all, I want to thank you for your ongoing dialogue and your concern about our community and our ongoing working relationship. I'm here representing the people in the greater Collinwood community and the greater Glenville community and our concerns about the proposal that is before the board as it pertains to no swimming and no body contact with the water, specifically at Euclid Creek Reservation, and more specifically at Euclid Beach, Villa Angela Beach. Mr. Chairman and members, I find this proposal draconian and quite frankly very upsetting and disturbing to my community. We're the only east side swimming beach. There is no other public swimming beach on the east side. Euclid Beach is it. And we've been utilizing the lakefront since 1796. As old as the city of Cleveland is, that's how we've utilized that lakefront. Our community is wedded to the lakefront. Now we're told in 2015, not only can we not swim at Euclid Beach in Villa Angela, but we can't even come in contact with the water. So unless someone can show me that there's sharks or piranha in the water, I don't understand that policy. You can't even walk. I had people call me, residents, not lawbreakers, not people up at the park violating anyone's rights, who just walked in the water and were told that if they didn't get out of the water, it was going to be a $150 ticket or you're going to jail. Now that, quite frankly, is outrageous. In light of everything we've experienced in this city in the last 2 months, to put rangers in that situation where they have to tell families to get out of the water. We all know what the humidity was last week. And when the humidity goes up and that lake warms up, it is a magnet. It is an attraction. We're going to have families going down to that water and being told, as they were this last weekend, you cannot go in the water. You can't even put your feet in the water. Now I myself, not only just Euclid Beach, but Villa Angela and Euclid Creek. I walk my dog in that creek. Am I gonna get arrested? I mean, again, we have to come up with a reasonable policy. I understand some of the concerns and issues that were uncovered at Euclid Beach. But I have to tell you as well, people have been swimming down there, and if you contact officially Cleveland EMS, no puncture wounds, No need to be responded by EMS for any of this stuff, because this stuff was all buried for 50 years until they went in there and started digging in the bottom. Then they uncovered this stuff. Well, if you go in my backyard, because I live on a creek, and you start digging, you're going to find stuff that I don't even know is there either. That's the challenge. So if this has been uncovered, obviously it has to be dealt with at Euclid Beach, but at Villa Angela Beach, we should be allowed contact. Now, we were told there was going to be beach ambassadors. First, then we were told there were going to be lifeguards. Now we're told no body contact at all with the water. Think about that.
But Mike, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
On the Villa Angela Beach, how is that? How does that doesn't have a breakwater front?
Yes, it does. All the beaches have a breakwater.
Continuous breakwater?
Right. Well, there's gaps in it, but it's a continuous breakwater.
Okay. Does that have that steep drop off?
There are some areas that they drop off after you walk out there. But again, it's been like that, Mr. Chairman, for as long as I can recall. And if you are responsible and you watch your children and you pay attention, there has never been an issue. It's people who attempt to go out to the rocks and And now, to their credit, Metro Parks have posted the rocks that they are off limits, which is a very good move, and I commend Brian and his folks for posting that. There's no swimming at Wildwood allowed, and it's been like that traditionally because of the marina, because of the piers, etc. We have no objection to that because you shouldn't be swimming where there's boats coming in and out of the docks. But again, we don't. This is a community, Mr. Chairman. We don't belong to country clubs. This is our form of recreation outside of the city pools. We have two city pools, but when it gets very hot, people are drawn to the lake. It's a magnet, and you've got to understand it. So we have to come up with a reasonable approach to deal with this. To put rangers, who we've had what's a wonderful working relationship, to put rangers in that position that they're going to have to give a ticket or possibly arrest someone for just putting their foot in the water, I predict you there's going to be a conflict down there. There is going to be a conflict down there. And I can, as sure as I'm standing here, you're going to get a bunch of families down there on a hot day, and those kids are going to want to walk in the water. And they're going to be told they can't, and it's going to lead to conflict down there, and be prepared for it. And to put Metro Parks in that position, to put our community in that position, is unacceptable. We need to come up with a better plan to deal with the issues that you uncovered and you dug up at Yucca Beach. Let's come up with a plan for Villa Angela where people can have access or can walk in the water, can wave, whatever the case may be. But, I mean, step back and just think about this policy. No contact at all. And that's what they were told. And the emails that I received and the phone calls that I received, that's what people were told. Don't even walk in that water. That's unconscionable. Okay. We can't do that. And I appeal to you to either hold off on this policy, either reject it or hold off on it, you could Creek Reservation until we can have a more in-depth discussion.
Okay, thank good. You. Now, obviously there are probably many of you who want to talk. We'd love to get different points of view on this. I think the councilman has been very articulate the way he described it. We have, yes, please.
Yes, Gordon. I'm a resident of South Euclid, not in Clayville, not in Cowboy, but with my two sons and wife. And we also use the park, and we also pay county taxes. We participate in park cleanups in aquatic planting. We are volunteers, community members. It is the, as the councilman said, closest access point anywhere on the east side of greater Cleveland to Lake Erie for fishing, for building sandcastles, for flying a kite, where you may just wind up touching the water. And it is really unreasonable to restrict a water park in this type of way. If that is the policy, you might as well close the park. Otherwise, it's of no use to the community, because it is a water park on Lake Erie in the Eagle Creek. And I'd also like to second the objection to heavy-handed enforcement of rules. On a personal note, the person who was mentioned in the media as a close friend of mine, a very upstanding citizen, and should not have been treated that way. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
My name's Terry Dew. I live on Crestland, which is in the North Hollywood neighborhood. I moved from 35 years in Cleveland Heights to that neighborhood because of the lake. I'm 68 years old. I've been swimming in that lake since I was a kid. My kids have swum in the lake. My grandsons could have very easily been me that was arrested, because I'm over there all the time with my grandkids, playing in the sand, scooping out water. I was in Marblehead over the time that this arrest happened, and I was not aware. My question is, you built a bridge from the Wildwood parking lot directly to the beach. I assume that that was to make access to the beach easier for all of us hauling sand buckets and coolers and beach chairs. So what is the point of this lovely bridge if you can't go to the water?
Any other comments? One more,
I'm here with you.
Can you talk a little louder, please?
Yes, my name is Sharon Chico, and I live on a road 6 houses from the lake. I'm here on behalf of one of my neighbors who couldn't be here tonight, and she's an avid beach glass collector. She go out to the lake and go swimming, but she does go out there two or three times a week. She's an elderly woman, and this is her hobby. And she's going to be told now that she cannot step into the water to collect this beautiful beach glass that our lake produces and share it with the neighbors. We can't take that away from her, or any of us. And as far as the beach, the bridge goes, I completely agree. Why build a bridge if you can't cross it to go over? And the sign says no swimming. It doesn't say no wading, or it just says no swimming. And that little girl was not swimming that day. She was wading. I saw her directly after that incident, and her pants rolled up and were not wet. She was ankle deep.
Any other comments? Yes, ma'am.
I just want to talk about the lack of transparency with this board voting on this. If this unfortunate incident did not happen with my husband and my daughter, the community would not have known you were voting on a no-touch policy. I know you posted a tiny blurb in the Talbot Observer, but as much as I regret that this incident happened with my family, I'm glad that now the community knows you're criminalizing touching the water at the only east side beach, and that rangers were enforcing a policy that you had not yet approved. Their tactics were heavy-handed, they acted in an unprofessional manner, and they really scared my daughter. The other thing is, the portrayal in the media of this beach as unsafe is also not accurate. We have been swimming at Villa Angela Beach for 15 years. I have never seen anything like this. And if you dug it up over on Euclid Beach side, then you need more creative solutions to meet the community needs. You need to either cordon off a swimming area on the Euclid Beach or the Villa Angela side, and there's no swimming on the Euclid Beach side. But I'm not sure your employees even know the difference between the Villa Angela side and the Euclid Beach side, which is clear from the ticket my husband received. He was clearly on the Villa Angela side of the beach. And you make it sound like in the media we're swimming through an obstacle course of rebar. I've never seen anything like this ever, and my daughter was never in any danger. Never. She was in less than 4 inches of water when she came home from this very memorable day at the beach, seeing my husband handcuffed because he was saying, you know what, she's not swimming. He was standing up for his rights and the rights of the community. She was not swimming, and your policy at the time said no swimming. She was in 4 inches of water. He stood up for the community's rights and said, go ahead, write me the ticket. But when I saw her coming home directly after this incident, her jeans were not wet. She was not swimming. They were not breaking any rules. So I just think there needs to be more transparency with what you're planning on doing with our community resources. And I think the board should come up with some more creative solutions to meeting the needs of the community.
I'd like to comment. Any more? Is that I'd like to comment on this if I could a little bit. First of all, we really appreciate feedback, and whether it's good feedback or bad feedback, generally feedback is that's what we have to have to run a park properly. The other issue is that before we get to enjoying the parks, recreation, and all the things that we love in Metro Park for, we have to think of one thing, and it's the same thing the doctor thinks of, and that is do no harm. Before you have people enjoying the park, it's do no harm. Now, there have been 4 deaths on these east side parks, and I think we could probably get the names if we needed them. But how many people have lost children in this school? To my way of looking at this thing, we want to make this thing safe, and we want to make it safe, but we want to make it safe. Obviously, we're going to make it safe. This we're going to make it as safe as Edgewater Park is, and we're going to do it in a way, we're envisioning this as being a very busy place. It's not so busy now. It's going to be very busy when it's safe and it's at Metro Park standards. What you can walk and drop off very quickly, that's Trevino died, and it's the way Kelly Walker died. And so they were walking in very shallow water. And I probably would have been just like your husband. I would have wanted my kids to walk in the water. I probably would have done exactly the same thing. And I I wouldn't have, when the officer came, I'm probably not as persistent as your husband is, but I can completely understand what happened. But from our standpoint, we have got to make sure this is really safe. And now we know that it's not safe. In other words, we know it doesn't meet the specs of beaches, of public beaches. It just doesn't. So the issue here is, how can we bridge the gap to this year, basically? We're going to get the Corps of, I'm confident the Corps of Engineers is going to let us make the modifications necessary to this beach. I'm positive that it'll happen. The way the breakwalls were set up is not safe. It's not the way it should have been, but it's the way it is, and we have to change it. So, and we're going to change it. So what we're talking about is a bridge to get to where it's the way we want it, the way it's Metro Park specs. And all of you, every single person in this room, when we get to the final destination, you're going to all like it. Guaranteed. I'm positive of that. But getting there is the painful part. And I think what we have to do is we have to discover a way that will give, that will, I mean, the E. coli, we're not talking about that. I'm talking about just the inability to keep a kid from walking out. In 3 feet, it drops down very, very quickly in some places. Well, it does, and it changes. But we've got all sorts of data on this now. So our feeling is that if we can wait a year to get something good and have a bridge in the meantime that gives something that is pleasant. I mean, the beach is open, and I mean, a wading pool or something like that would make it safe. There'll be construction equipment out there this year. So we have to figure out how to get there. And I completely understand what you're saying. I love beaches, and I love it. I don't mind a little bit of polluted, mildly polluted water. Obviously, we can't have kids go out there when it's really polluted. Like it was yesterday and the day before yesterday. We've been working on systems that measure pollution. You know, the problem with the way we measure pollution now is it takes 1 or 2 days to get the measurement. So you have to look in advance. You're estimating the pollution. We need to have something that measures it immediately. So we're working on this and we're doing it. But you know, we're a big organization and. That we have to do things the way that we think is right. And so I think, Michael, what I'd like to make sure you know is we'll continue thinking of some way to make it a more pleasant experience for this year. But for next year, it's going to be a great experience.
But Mr. Chairman, the no contact policy, I'm telling you, is going to create a problem.
Yeah.
You will have a problem there, and I predict it as I'm sitting here today. You will have a problem. You're going to need to put 20 rangers down there, and you're going to put them in a very difficult position and trying to keep little kids out of the water from going, just walking in there, waiting in there with their parents. I mean, think about that. On these hot days, you're at the beach and you cannot touch the water. That's absurd. That's an absurd policy. This is going to lead to conflict.
But how do you protect at the next level? When you let someone wade in, how do you make sure that they're not going to a point where it's
dangerous? We were told we were going to have beach ambassadors. We were told we were going to have lifeguards.
Okay. I think this is a good opportunity to just highlight a little bit of the data that we've come to this point.
Would that be okay just to show you something so we're all on the same?
Good. Be my guest.
Okay.
Sean?
Good morning, Commissioners. So in order to look forward, we need to look back and understand the history of the shoreline in the area. So one of the first things we did when we assumed the parks in June of 2013 was we did a study to determine all the shore structures and their capacities and in what state of condition they were in. So I want to walk you through a history of some aerials, actually. We have data going back to 1949 that shows the condition of the shoreline. So here you can see you still have portions of the active Yucca Beach Amusement Park here. And then you've got Villa Angela here and Wildwood here. As we progress through these aerials, you're going to see a lot of change in the shoreline. So in 1956 here, we've got Euclid Beach Amusement Park with a very long pier, and then jetties that protrude from the shore. There's no shore protection at Villa Angela. Moving to 1968, not much of a change. In 1969, that's when Euclid Beach Amusement Park closed its doors. So from 1968 to 1973.
So Sean, what happened? Go back one slide. What happened? So you notice that that's probably a lake level issue where the sand is going so far out into the groins where you see it.
Correct. And throughout all this time, the lake levels are fluctuating. So in 1966, we actually had a low year. You'll see in 1986, we had the highest year ever on record for lake levels. So in addition to man-made changes going on, we've got natural changes occurring on the shoreline. So 1968, this is the year before Euclid Beach Amusement Park closed. 1973, so this is 4 years after the park was closed, you'll see that the pier is gone. You'll also see that there has been a lot of infrastructure that is no longer there. Where those demolition debris went, we do not have any definitive records of, but is it likely that what was encountered in this area of the beach, is that construction debris? Maybe. So moving on to 1980, you'll see here that we still have the pier that's been partially removed. We have the jetties that are protruding into the water, and still at this point, at Villa Angela, no improvements, although now the school has been raised. 1986, high water levels. So you see here that the lake has come up very close to shore, and in portions of Villa Angela, there literally is no shoreline. 1989, lake waters have receded a little bit, the jetties have been removed, and then we have the three offshore breakwaters that were installed in front of the former Euclid Beach Amusement Park, now Euclid Beach State Park.
Who was the idiot that put the breakwater?
Well, I think we got to be careful because these offshore breakwaters are doing their job in protecting the beach. What they're not doing is creating a great swim environment. So they're keeping the sand on the beach, but the slopes and the scallops that they've created have not produced a swimming environment that we are comfortable with. So you can see here, though, that in 1989, the shoreline has started to scallop a little bit in front of the offshore breakwaters. 1993, not a whole bunch of change, but you can see that the shoreline has shifted a little bit. 2002, okay, now we can start to see that this what's called a tombolo has created, where the sand has deposited behind the breakwater. You can also see these areas here and here where the sand has started to deposit behind the breakwater. So we have scalloped areas between the breakwaters, and now by 2002, we have the addition of the eastern three breakwaters, and thousands of yards of sand were trucked in to Villa Angela to create that beach. And then the offshore breakwaters here are protecting that beach in the sand. So moving on to more modern aerials, we have 2003. You can see, again, some movement in those scallops. When you look through these aerials, you see continual movement in the scallops. So 2006, you can start to see little scallops forming at Villa Angela. 2011, this is the most modern aerial in the ODNR database that we have from our study. But again, you can see that changing scallop along the lakefront. Okay. So then, after we took possession of the park, we started our own process of collecting data. So we did several iterations of sonar and soundings. So October 2014, we did soundings. We found that the lakeshore at that time had drastically shifted from where aerials had shown it just a year before. So again, lots of movement along the lakeshore. We did a very large sonar sounding in December of 2014. And then in April of 2015, when we were putting the final touches on where the designated swim area was going to be for summer 2015, we wanted to make sure that over the winter time from December to April, there weren't a lot of shifts. We did find shifts, so we were able to designate a small portion of the beach as that area that met the Army Corps standards for swimming beaches. So May 21st, we go out to the site. We are literally ready to set the buoys, and we encounter in this area the debris on the bottom of the lake. I personally was in the lake, and the items that we found here that are shown in front of you were on the lake bottom. My leg literally hit this post. So these things were not unearthed. They were laying there. So this here shows, so we did soundings that day. We brought out the sonar equipment to find out what kind of shifts we'd seen from April to May. And we saw some minor shifts, especially in this area, in these edges of the scallops in front of the offshore breakwaters. So here is the scallop that I was just pointing to. We have a video, and I want to show you the drastic slopes that are encountered in front of these scallops and along the beach. So I'm in 3 feet of water, and I've only walked 10 or 11 feet into the lake. And that is telling. And wading or swimming or walking, you do not know what to expect as you go up and down the lakeshore. So we have this exhibit that shows where these scallops occur. We've got varying degrees of slopes, some up to 20% along those scallops. We did find this small area that met the Army Corps standards. That's when we went to go set the buoys to have the designated swim area, and unfortunately that's when we encountered the submerged debris. So hopefully that gives you some history of some of the work we've done and some of the look back we've also performed to look forward. Because what we'd like to do, and what we're talking to the Army Corps about doing for next swim season, because we have to be able to prove in studies that this will work for the long term, is connecting some of these offshore breakwaters so that we can control that wave action behind the offshore breakwater so we don't have this dangerous scalloping effect. So that's what we're working on for the long term, for the 2016 season.
They may be turned into groins coming out.
We're looking at all options right now. We're heavily studying connecting the offshore breakwaters. We feel that may be the best option right now.
But I mean, I would think that would have to really be looked at carefully.
Because
that just, you just develop trash behind it.
Well, so
I would think that, I mean, this is the complexity of this thing. This is not easy, you know, dealing with this sort of thing. So this has to be done carefully. And I mean, you know, maybe there's a way to do something that would allow some waiting this summer. I'm hoping we can get something done before. I mean, it will have to be a rush project to do this in a year. But there's a lot of work that has to be done. This was not thoughtfully done, in my opinion.
So, Commissioner, if I could add, we have submitted to the Army Corps of Engineers, Buffalo office, to this summer, hopefully, get into the water to remove the debris and then deposit sand back on the lake bottom. We're working as fast as we can. They're working as fast as they can. So hopefully that does occur. But right now, we're hoping that they issue the necessary permits so that work can take place as a very temporary measure for 2015.
Do you have any idea how long that would take? I mean, not the permit side of it, obviously, but once we get in to do the work, how long would it take? And then we presumably would be able to clean it up, get in clean sand, and open up a temporary area.
I think we'd be comfortable with a 2-week time frame to physically do the work in the field.
Okay, so if we get the permits, it's something that's doable over the summer period, assuming we don't run into something more significant.
Correct, if and when.
If I may, the area that delineated on your map, your aerials, I thought were very good because it shows what a magnificent beachfront area we have. Over, close to maybe about almost a half a mile of beachfront. Over half of that is Villa Angela. What we're told today is that delineated area on your map, the crosshairs, that's the area where the debris. What about the rest? I mean, we can't walk in the water at Villa Angela? I mean.
So, if I could respond to that. What the designated swim area that was identified here was the only area that met the slopes and gradients set by U.S. Army Corps. Okay? The areas at Villa Angela, they're very steep. They're very steep wetland when you walk from the shore into the water, and they change. So that is the concern that we have. I mean, you can see here plainly from the sonar and the topography of the lake bottom that these offshore breakwaters have allowed these scalloped areas to occur, especially between the breakwaters. That's where the lake bottom is the steepest.
Commissioner Moore, what I'd like to address is that, you know, the policy in front of you does allow, once the work is being done and we've found a solution, we still can reopen under the discretion of our CEO. So we built that language into the policy to still allow swimming in 2015 if we can find a viable, safer solution than exists right now. What I also like, though, to discuss, too, is that, you know, this policy is not just about Eagle Beach, Villa Angela. It's about 21 locations throughout our 23,000 acres and the metro parks that we have carefully studied and reviewed to evaluate the safety issues, where there may be latent defects that are not visible to the average person and to the public. And once we know about them, we have a duty and an obligation to warn. Greg Headley and Tom Coles, our safety manager and our director of risk management, can provide just a little more of that background regarding the safety issues and the reasons for closure of these other 21 locations. This is not just about Eagle Beach, Villa Angela. I'd also like to correct a couple of inaccuracies in the public comments. It's body contact, no body contact with the water. So, of course, we have boats and vessels and kayaks that we can put in. They're in the water. So. It's body contact. We have a nearby Sims Beach who allows no contact. This policy doesn't allow body contact. So we have tried to be reasonable. We've tried to, as you said in your opening comments, first do no harm. And now that we know about this debris, we have an obligation to the public to warn them about these latent defects.
In the Sims Beach case, which municipality? That's not one of ours.
That's the City of Euclid.
And they don't allow, now is that E. coli or is that Steve Gray?
I believe it's both GNR and Paris. So Greg and Tom, please give a little bit more of that background regarding the safety issues.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Rose. Good morning. Once again, I'd like to restate what the proposed policy is. Once again, we are designating some areas in the Park District, or wish to designate some areas in the Park District as no swimming or body contact with the water. Really, the goal, primary goal, is a patron safety, visitor safety. We do not want them to be potentially exposed to hazards or other conditions whereby they may be harmed or injured. We're really talking about potentially serious injuries or something even more serious than an injury in some cases. What we really were tasked with in risk management was to compile these locations, to assess these locations. The way we did that, we first looked at areas where we already had designated no swimming or body contact with water. We already had several locations within the park districts that for years had been designated as no swimming or body contact with water. We looked at those areas, those locations, and the hazards associated with those locations, and we extended that to other locations in the park district that had similar hazards or conditions, and we added those to our assessment. After that, we solicited information from our partners in the park district, our other departments, especially the rangers. We asked the rangers, you know, where were we seeing incidents, where were we seeing water rescues, where they were having issues. We took that into consideration as well. We also reached out to our aquatics manager, our park operations staff, our managers, and our directors. Obviously, those are the people that know their facility. They know how their facilities are being used. They also know what the hazards are that may be associated with those locations. So we took all those into consideration and compiled these locations, proposed locations, where we did not permit swimming or body contact with water. We then carefully vetted those. So we took careful consideration. Some of those areas took a little less consideration than others. We already spoke about our marinas, boat ramps, and boat docks. Obviously, there's a high volume of boat traffic in those areas. Not want people swimming or having contact with the water within reason in those areas. Some took a little more consideration. Last meeting we talked about Perkins Beach along the west side near Edgewater Park. They do have those groins that extend out into Lake Erie, and those groins are in a state of disarray, state of disrepair. And we see crumbled concrete, broken rebar sticking out. And we have designated those groins as not to be used or not to be people to be on. We also didn't know what the condition was under the water. So we had an indication because of the conditions above the water were so severe that they didn't find the same conditions under the water, but we weren't sure. So what we actually did was we did an exploratory dive, which with divers in the water, to see exactly what was under there. And we did see debris, rebar, broken concrete, which would be potentially hazardous and create severe injury to our park patrons, so we designated that to no swimming. So that was sort of the way we got to the policy. And then, of course, we just talked about our difficulties that you would need as well. Thank you.
Let's see. I think, let me ask a question of you, Mike. If we could carefully look at what we could do this year for some sort of a wading experience, and you know, the pool is 500 yards away, the regular pool. But I see your point of people wanting to be on the beach, getting wet at the beach. If we could do something, if Brian could work on some sort of way of making this so it's a transition thing. It's not going to be perfect. We're not going to say it's going to be perfect, but we have to be all thinking of the vision of making this really great. And I don't think we yet have a solution to how to make it really great, but we're going to do that. That's our commitment to you. But in the meantime, you know, there's an awkward period. Four people have died in the last, in 13, 14, and 15. Four people have died.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think that is, I don't know what information you've given. The most recent to the dove off of Wildwood Pier, where they should have never been in 55 degree weather, and no swimming area to begin with. So when you look at the specific incidents here at the beach, the individual that went out to the rocks should have never been on the rocks, the individuals that jumped in. When you take away those, then you look at the actual, what has transpired, look at the number of people who use that park, and look at the number of times EMS have had to respond, you'll see that overwhelmingly, Euclid Beach is a safe place, and Villangel's been a safe place for all these years. You gotta look at the specific incidents. You can say, oh, we had these fatalities, but you have to look at individual cases. There has to be a reasonable policy as it pertains to wading or walking in the water. That's what we're asking for, a reasonable policy based on a common sense approach. Because if not, I'm telling you, you're gonna have an issue down there, and it's one that you're not gonna like, and that's the situation that's gonna exist. People go to that water. The kids wanna walk in that water with their tails. They wanna walk along the water's edge. There's gotta be some compromise. The common sense, reasonable people can come up with reasonable solutions. And we need some reasonable solutions than this draconian thing. Don't touch the water. I mean.
The policy doesn't say don't touch the water. It says there's no body contact.
You're the attorney. I don't want to hear the attorney stuff. I'm talking about real people who walk in the water with their kids who are told to get out of the water.
Please keep order that the chairperson is in charge of.
Michael, let's do this. Let's get something on the we've got 24 places that we have to deal with. If we can get back to get something where we can get wading in. Being understanding that we have a different standard for safety than has been used in the past, and also understanding that we want to make this place great. We want to make it as popular as Edgewater.
And we support that.
And we're going to do that. I mean, that's our job to do that. But we've got to, you know, we have a deliberation process. Like, for one, Brian, I'm not sure that you want break walls in front of it, or you may want it groin out. I mean, who knows? That's the stuff we have to figure out, right? So would you take the responsibility of getting back to getting some situation where we could have some sort of wading experience? I'm not saying in the water, some sort of a wading experience so we can get by this year, this unpleasant year, to figure out how we're going to do this.
Yes, the answer is yes. I mean, our everything that we've done to this point has led this to be a destination. And yes, the Bridges is designed to have people bring them and do the things. We're inviting people there. We've encountered a few things that have increased a few of the setbacks. We're working again diligently to get the permit. We're on the phone trying to expedite that as soon as absolutely possible. Our goal is not to move people out of the water. But we are working through this to provide it in a safe manner.
And Michael, the thing that's critical here is changing the shoreline is really tricky stuff. I mean, it's very complicated. And I'm not sure we know what how to do it yet. And the waves go from different directions at different times of year and the severity, and you can scallop the sand out or you can have it build up behind something. Very tricky stuff. And I want them to do it right. I think that's a critical thing. So we're gonna do our absolute best to get a wading experience this year. And then next year we're gonna have some. We'll know what we're doing next year. Right now we don't. You know, we're not sure what this thing will eventually look like. But it's gonna be a great beach, and you're gonna be proud of it.
Mr. Chairman, we have been very supportive of Metro Parks. Our community supported the levy overwhelmingly. I personally campaigned for it. We are here to be partners, we're here to be partners. We were not a partner of this decision to deny access with body content. We were not a part of that decision process. We need to be a part of it. We need to be kept abreast. We have a magnificent lakefront, and we appreciate everything that Metro Park has done. That's why I personally lobbied to get the Metro Park takeover, and was
right.
One of the prime sponsors of the legislation.
Yeah, you were a key part of it.
But the fact of the matter is, we've got to come up with a policy where we cannot, if that's the case, you might as well put Bob Boyer along the lakefront.
Now, we're gonna, you know, what we've got is, think of this as a construction project. And that's the way we have to think of it. And we have to think of a way of modifying the meat. Now we have to get back to our regular meeting. We're way over all we're doing.
But we are committed to a solution, and I think, again, the policy, as Rose pointed out, allows us to change it when we reach the right solution. So I think that we want to work with you and work with you.
So as we leave, Ms. Perry and Mr. Chairman, as we leave this meeting today, this weekend, someone walks into water, what's going to happen?
This weekend, we need to get our arms around this thing. And I think. We need to give you a wading experience, but it may take, I don't know, it could take a while. I don't know how long.
The rangers will talk to the folks. They will be on the beach. They will educate people that, you know, are not in the room necessarily, are not hearing this, and make sure that they're aware of what the issue is and that we're working on a solution for it.
So if they walk in the water, if they walk in the water at their ankles, they're going to get $150 fifty. Is that what I'm being told?
I think we can talk to our ranger department about that. It's body contact. What we're trying to prevent is a lazying situation that puts children in harm's way or adults in harm's way. So if it's walking at the edge, that's not necessarily body contact, but that's something we have to talk to our rangers about. And
Michael, we'll figure it out and we'll work together on it. But what we have to do is we got to get this meeting going, and we also have to get it.
And our resolution again is about the number of locations with different situations. So I think we start there, but we work to move that and again.
And thank you.
As we feel comfortable that it's safe and that we can figure out a solution.
And thank you for coming in. I mean, it's extremely important having people here, and we appreciate it. And we'll work with you on this, and we'll get it done. So 10 years or 5 years from now, we're really going to be proud of it. And let's bridge that area in between.
We're here to work with. We're here
good.
To work.
Thank you.
We have to.
It's on the internet, but we can make copies. I think we made some copies available. So yes.
Okay. Can you and can we tell them how to get it on the internet while we continue? Let's see. I want to go on to the next. Now, Brian, it's yours.
I think we'll allow for just the transition if folks want to leave before
okay.
The regular schedule.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Now we've got the CEO's report.
Thank you very much. The first action item we have under general action items is the action item A, 2015 budget adjustment number one. David?
Thanks, Brian. Well, this is budget adjustment one of four lately for the 2015 budget. In addition to the internal transfers within the Metro Parks, we're actually asking commissioners to increase our budget to $3.3 million due to 100% new grants and donations. In fact, 39 new grants and donations have come in since the budget was adopted for 2015. So we're increasing our budget for grants and donations after the $3.3 million contemplated today to $13.6 million in outside taxpayer support, which is a phenomenal number to be very proud of. The recommended action falls on page four.
Move approval. Second. On favor, aye.
The next action item we have is the proposed 2016 tax budget.
So looking forward to 2016 already. This is the 2016 tax budget, so it does not replace our annual budget that will be prepared for 2016. This is a tax budget, so it only provides assurances to the Cuyahoga County Budget Commission that all taxes levied on our behalf are needed for its operation. It's that simple. Also, formality in Ohio Revised Code, I did conduct a public hearing of our tax budget on June 9th at 1 o'clock, and we'll transmit our tax budget to the Budget Commission upon the board's approval of it today. Action item is on the bottom of page four.
Move approval. Second. On favor, aye.
The next set of action items relate to the committing of matching funds and entering into the grant agreement relative to the budget adjustments. Our group has been doing amazing work with the Ohio EPA agency under the 319 section of Clean Water. We have authorization actually asked for the board to commit the matching funds for the Seneca Golf Course parking lot retrofit. It's a 2.1 acre asphalt parking lot, which we will be retrofitting into some more vegetated areas, permeable pavers, and such. We were also looking at the Acacia Reservation segments of Eden Creek that have been negatively impacted by the development and the surrounding landscape. We are looking for the commitment there under the 319 as well. We are using WRSP funding as part of our general match as well for those two particular projects to enter into the agreements with the OEPA under the 319 and the WRSP funds. We recommend action on the top of page six.
Second. On favor, aye.
The next action item we have is just a bid revision to 6028. We are asking for the additional $3,532 for the AIS system. Essentially, this is a receiver system that transmits and receives position locations through the GPS. It allows us to be seen by the commercial barges, freighters, and the Great Lakes on the Great Lakes through the towing organization, as well as monitored by the Coast Guard and the Lake Carriers Association. The recommended action to modify the bid in the amount of $3,552 is on the bottom portion of page six.
And this is pretty widely used by the other carriers and freighters in Ohio.
Yeah, it's fairly consistent, yes.
Move approval. Second. On favor, aye.
The next action item we have is the second reading of the adoption of the policy of the designated swim areas for the body contact and the water policy, as it has been basically stated through the round of public comment. Again, we are working diligently to find the solutions, but as the recommended action is designated, it's found in the middle bottom portion of page 8, designating areas for no swim or body contact with the water, one limitation, and the chief executive officer is further authorized to reopen the designated areas as closed with other body contact upon determination.
And then you'll be working with a quick solution for the issue of awaiting experience at the east side.
Again, everything that we've done in the time that we've been in charge of this property is leading us to provide this type of experience. Perfect. The beach is open, the park is open, activities can go on, and we are working and we are committed to providing and finding the solution. I know this is one of the toughest decisions even in the neighborhood. We are working forward towards it, and as we can get resolution, we will be working to open this to the public.
Yeah, good.
Move approval.
On favor, aye.
The next action item we have is a change order to contract 1182, the Mill Creek Connector Trail. This is part of the phase two coming off of the Ohio and Erie Canal. This is a change order relative to non-performance of the overlook trail and retaining wall. We'll be receiving a credit of $94,700 for the non-performance of the overlook trail. In lieu of, we will be adding that to the retaining wall that we found for factors of underlying slope stability issues. The recommended change order falls in the middle portion of page 9 to enter into the change order number 3 with independent excavator.
All in favor, aye.
We will move into recommended action related to the bids. We have professional services, payroll processing, various food purchases with Cisco and GFS, and the co-op provision, and a truck body modification and outfit. Those can all be found relative to page 10 for the recommended action.
All in favor, aye.
We have then the next item for approval. We have the approval of vouchers and payroll,
which is on page 17, resolution 1506099. The following vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the high-rise code.
We will move into a few of our employee guests this morning with us. We have two of our employee guests relative to purchasing and payroll specialists.
Thanks, Brian. Well, first off, staff in the room knows and the commissioners know about my attention to detail. It shows, and it showed this morning in another very clean audit, not only from the auditor of state as part of our annual audit, but from a special group that did an agreed upon procedure audit of all of our finance operations. So I'm very, very proud of that and proud of the staff that made that happen. Some of those individuals, I would say, are here this morning. To give that a real quick recap and to kind of put things in perspective, Becky Ecker, so stand up. She is in charge of all of our ProCard transactions. So all the transactions that go through across the park that are less than $1,000 that we put actually on a credit card. 26,000 of those transactions go through flawlessly under Becky's direction and leadership. So it's amazing. Our second guest, Sarah. Sarah Foster is on the payroll side. So she is our payroll specialist. So in payroll, we processed this last pay period a record 1,663 pays. That's the highest it's ever been. You put that up to annual numbers, 45,000 payrolls across the park. An amazing task. And they do, each of them, do it flawlessly. You know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's. It's a very important attention to detail. With that, those, that's an overview. So, Ron, if you'd like to introduce
sure.
Becky.
Becky comes to us from Kent State. Has a son, Logan, 12 years old, is beginning to do all the park things, showing up at the zoo, showing up at all our events and everything. And she and her husband are very happy having this park connection, their park users, so they got the plug. One of the things that stood out with Beck during the interview process, she's been with us 6 months now, from the beginning she was asking questions, and about those ProCard statements, couldn't we do it this way, and have we ever thought about that, and right away bringing questions to it, and made it her own, and that's how you do a good job, is making it your own. And she takes great pride in her work, been a terrific asset for us, and I'm so glad to have her work.
Thank you for the invitation and thanks for the opportunity. And I'm proud to work in the finance department. Knowledgeable, friendly people, hardworking people. And I look forward to many years here to contribute.
Thank you. I am going to take the opportunity to further introduce Sarah to you. Sarah came to us in January, joined us at the perfect time as we were implementing and converting into a new software system for payroll. Getting all of those new seasonals on board, which has kept her very busy. She brings with her a wealth of experience from a payroll processing company, doing payroll tax returns, everything related to that, and also payroll processing for thousands of clients, more than I would want to cover at three of them. She does have a unique position in payroll because she not only works with us in finance, she works very closely with HR, so she bridges those two departments does so well. I think the fact that she is a University of Toledo grad may have helped with that. And Sarah has also given me permission to warn the crowd. She's a huge Browns fan. When the season is in play, come Monday morning, if the team hasn't done much, she may be a little grumpy. My advice is just ignore it. She doesn't calculate, okay, so we don't want to throw a holler and be grumpy because I'm so doing well.
Thank you for having me here today. I really appreciate this opportunity. And I just want to say on a very personal note, I grew up in Millbrook Heights, so I am right at Big Creek. I'm at the stream, house, getting a jump from Rock River. So I grew up in these parks, and it makes me really proud to be part of this organization. And one of the things we're talking today about looking at the future, every day, I think my son up from daycare, he looks for the low, he looks for the leaf. And at the Millbrook Heights, there are five on our way home from daycare to our house. And every day, he's like, a leaf, that's part of Metro Parks. And so that to me, like, that's what we're working for, is the future. And the fact that my son takes pride in that as much as I do, it's priceless.
Thank you and welcome.
Can we take just a second and say thank you to David and Karen and Dana and Becky and Sarah just for all of our work done with the two audits and everything.
Yeah, good job.
They're all known. The next information item we have is conserving the big three for the 100th anniversary.
Commissioners, yes, we are looking to the future, but we also get to look to the past. We're going to take a little trip today. It does not create any water areas, so we're good. We're moving forward with the 100th anniversary. We have lots of things already on the books for 2017. Debbie is feverishly planning stuff for employees starting this fall, going into 2016. But one of the sections we call our special projects that we actually have named the big three. When we looked at this, we wanted to identify the areas in Cleveland Metro Parks that have historical significance. There are a lot of them. They all have importance in some way. But we noticed that there were just some that stood out amongst the rest. So we identified those, and once we did that, we targeted these areas for what can we do with them. We put together a team of park managers, center managers, resource managers, a historian, and other folks, and we looked at each of these sites specifically and said, what are your biggest dreams? What can you do here that really shows the importance of these areas, highlights what's happening today, and then also looking into the future, what can we do? With that, we also targeted for capital projects, for grants, for funding to do this. And we've got a plan to work on these areas, which we'll show you in a moment. But then we wanted to highlight it. We wanted to highlight it for the public. We also want to highlight it for the employees, because we need to know why these places are important. Why are they named what they are? Who are these people that we're talking about? And how does that play into the first 100 years and then play into the next 100 years? So let's take a little trip. We're going to head out to the west side in Rocky River Reservation, the Stinchcomb Grove Memorial. Up off of Hogsback Lane is this 10-acre plot of land that looks over a valley that is there because of Stinchcomb Grove. Some people don't even know who those folks are. Some do. If you notice in all of these, we wanted to tie them in. I'm just going to point this out. This rock is not there. It's just a wood Cleveland Metro Park site. We're proposing to get large sandstone rocks, have them engraved, that all three of the areas will have a similar look to it, so people can tie that in as this is an important area. But what's important about the area? Stinchcomb Memorial. William Stinchcomb, we know, is father of Cleveland Metro Parks. 1905, at age 27, which I cannot comprehend, I know I wasn't thinking that back then, he said, the city of Cleveland's grown so much, people need to get out to get away from the industrial area. We need to create a ring of park systems, green space, and he worked feverishly to that, to start Cleveland Metro Parks He did become the first executive director in 1921, so 36 years until he had a stroke and had to resign. The community appreciated all his work and dedicated this area and a monument up there, and we're looking at what can we do to enhance this area up there. The other part of it is the Grove Memorial. Off to the one side, there is the overlook, looks over the valley. Grove was handpicked by Stinchco back in 1940 to be our chief engineer of the park, and then became the executive director once Stinchco resigned. The important part of these two is for 52 years, they led Cleveland Metro Parks and kept the vision cohesive. All the work that Stinchcomb did, if growth comes in and changes everything, we look completely different today than what we are. So it's important that these two people up here recognize. We want to keep it open. We want to enhance the interpretive areas. We're looking for possible grant from the Cleveland Kiwanis Group. They have their 100th anniversary this fall. Stinchcomb was the president of the Cleveland Kiwanis back a long time ago. Growth is part of that. They really would like to partner with us and to do something. The other part up here is really where that overlook is. We determined off to the left, down below, is the first parcel of land Cleveland Metro Parks acquired back in 1919. We would like to somehow get that view up there. Steve Mather has taken the kite and the camera and mapped it, and we wanted to move it over here and found out that there are trees that are 120 feet tall. We're avoiding that. We're going to try something else to look over the first parcel of land, which is another reason this memorial is up there. From the west side, we're going east to North Chagrin Reservation, A.B. Williams Memorial Woods. Right now, the only thing that tells you that it's the Memorial Woods is this sign here, which is easy to pass as you pull in. When you go to the entrance, which is right here, you look, you don't even know it looks like any other woodland. We're proposing moving the kiosk to the left side and putting the identifying stone over here. But 65 acres of not just woods, but really special woods. Who's A.B. Williams? Arthur B. Williams is our first naturalist in Cleveland Metro Parks. In 1930, again, I am now going to be in my 56th year. This man at age 56 changed careers, got a doctorate degree in the outdoors, and started outdoor education at Cleveland Metro Parks. For 20 years he did this. I'm not doing that. I'm playing in the 100s and then I'm doing something else after that. But he was amazing. We did not have our own naturalist at that point, but Stinchcomb saw all the resources that we were gathering at that point and said, this is amazing stuff. People need to know about it. We need to make that connection between the land we're getting and the people and help them understand what it's all about. So he contracted with the Cleveland Museum of Natural History, and Arthur B. Williams came on, spent 20 years studying the outdoors, studying this tract of land especially, wrote books about it. It's a beech maple climax forest, one of the best beech maple forests in this area. And it just became home to him. And then one of the other things he started was the North Chagrin Trailside Museum. It opened in 1931. This is one of the first. We just recently found out that there's a little place in New Jersey-New York border that had the first Trailside Museum, the Palisades Park, which is the picture in the overlook room of the commissioner, or Stinchcomb, that was the place for the first one. This is the first one in Ohio to have started. And it brought in people for education. Within the first 3-4 months, there were already 12,000 people that came through this for programming and to see what the outdoors was about. This is the current look at it. You can see it's not there anymore. This was in 1930. In around the 40s or 50s, there was an extension added onto this, so it looked like a big T. Unfortunately, in 1987, lightning struck the pole outside of that. The current went right into the building and blew it up, and it is no longer there. We would like to not recreate the facility back there, but to open this area up to show the footprint of that building, possibly by putting posts in as though something's being created, and then put interpretive signage in those posts to allow people to actually walk into the space. Because you can't, right now, really get an idea of what it's all about. We are seeking grant money. We have a $105,000 ODNR grant in the works for trail improvements. We would like to create back in the woods, there's a hemlock ravine that is closed off right now, not the ravine, but the trail above, because the tree roots are being exposed. We would like to put in about 500 foot boardwalk back there with this grant, open up some of the areas that used to be open and just enhance this area. A.B. Williams Memorial Woods, once A.B. Williams resigned and following his death, this was dedicated to him and to his memory for all the work that he's done. It is also on the National Register, as is Tinker's Creek Scenic Overlook. So we have two places in the park with that. From the east side, we go to the third one. We go south to what we've called the Brecksville Historic Campus. You find a lot of history just in a small spot here. Again, here's that identifying marker. First thing there is Brecksville Nature Center. As you can see, it was opened in 1939. It just celebrated its 75th anniversary last year. I was fortunate to be working there at the time in 1989, where I helped prepare the exhibit tree for the 50th anniversary. I also was fortunate enough to work in the North Chagrin Trail side for a few months too before it burned out. So these are important places. A.B. Williams said, we want to have three nature center, or three trailside museums. One in North Chagrin as Beech Maple Forest. The second one, which was in 1936 in Rocky River, was in a floodplain area. And Brecksville was an oak hickory forest. So he wanted people to see what's out there in different areas. In 1992, this was listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The staff does a great job there. It's a small place, but it just oozes history back in there. It was built by the CCC and WPA, so there's an added significance to the structure. Right across the street from it is the Harry Keeler Shelter House. You're looking at the front of it. It is a T. The front part is the original and the oldest shelter house in Cleveland Metro Parks, built in 1928. In the 30s, the back section was added by the CCCs in this area. So we want to highlight that. Interesting, back in 1989, some of the posts were rotting out. John Robb and Wiz Moore came up with the idea, let's do this the old way. There's a lot of white oak in the woodlands, or in the open area back here. They dropped some of the trees by hand. They hand-stripped them, hand-hewed them, and put them in replace the old stuff to make it look just like it used to. They also added an ADA accessible ramp, which is off to the side here. They did the same thing with the wood, but they also went over the hill into Chippewa Gorge and quarried some of the sandstone in there, brought it up by hand, and put it in there so it looks perfectly natural like it did back in the 20s and 30s. Did everything by hand. The capital project's already underway. The roof has been reshaped. The lighting in there has been replaced with LED lighting, and it is really opening up. So some of that's already in the works, that in the big three that's being done. Who's Harry Keeler? Right nearby, just down the road, a couple hundred yards, is the memorial and the woods dedicated to this lady. As you can see in the map here, in this map, this green is the Harry Keeler Memorial Woods. It looks kind of like a weird looking manatee if you look closely, the two eyes. The section here in gray, there and there, this is Meadows Picnic Area. This is Chippewa Picnic Area. They're not included in the woods, which I'll explain why in a moment. Harry Keeler, back in the early days of Cleveland Metro Parks, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, was significant for the citizens of Cleveland in their education about the outdoors. She was a teacher in the city of Cleveland. She was assistant principal. She is the first female superintendent for the city of Cleveland Public Schools. And they're interested in that story and coming on board and partnering with us some way on this. When she passed away, the citizens just said, hey, she talks about the outdoors. She wrote about what's out here. We need to honor her some way. So they set aside this land in conjunction with Cleveland Metro Parks to this green area on the map, basically is set aside to enjoying the outdoors, plantings of the outdoors, studying the outdoors, just relaxing in the outdoors, no development. That's why the picnic areas are excluded from that, because there is some development there in regards to the picnic areas. But in 1990, the board rededicated that area, 370 acres, to her and the woods. So that's the south side of the big three. So these are the big three projects that we're working on. By spring of 2017, we should have it all set, ready to go. We're looking forward to it and highlighting these significant areas, including the parks. Any questions that I can answer? Great. Thank you.
That is the end of the information briefing items. Just an update on the old business, which is the very brief update on the Farnham House. We had dialogue with the mayor, and we believe that there was a resolution with the council yesterday. We are waiting to see the results of that, and we will report at a later date as to what the resolution is. Next meeting is Thursday, July 9th. And we do have an executive session relative to acquisition and purchase of real property.
Is there a motion to that?
So moved to go into executive session.
Roll call. Dan Moore?
Yes.
Debbie Berry?
Yes.
Thank you.